lay aside every weight and sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience or perseverance the race that is set before us, the life we've got to live. Let's run, keeping an eye on these who have gone on before, but more important, looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. Now, and then he goes on, consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest you be wearied and faint in your mind. You have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against them. In helping this friend of mine, I go back to the struggle I had 12 years ago, 13 years ago, in the sudden death of one of our sons, and this part, Hebrews 12 came to my assistance, and I lived with some of these verses very, very closely. In the matter of grief, I discovered that it was a very difficult thing to drop grief. When God helped me drop it, and I emerged into the sunshine again for a moment, I would be driven right back by the thought that I had to grieve. It was a duty to grieve. If I didn't grieve, it meant that I hadn't loved him after all. So, and this friend of mine has a very strong feeling about this now, that it's his duty to grieve. That if he doesn't grieve, it really is an indictment that he never loved her after all. So he's hung up on that. And the greatest help for me at that moment was to come to Hebrews 12 and picture my son in the bleachers and cheering me on as I dropped grief and returned to the common life and those who were living and the work to do and the joys and the friendships of the day. I pictured him cheering me on and saying, "Now you're making it. You know, that now you're running again." But this faltering with grief, this would cause him to groan in the bleachers. And I've asked my friend. I said, "There's no sense in your grieving." Well, I shouldn't say there's no sense. I don't say that to him because, after all. But I said, what do you think Mary and God are talking about up there in heaven when they look down and see you day after day grieving and moping like this? Do you think that makes them happy? You think that's what they want? And so God is saying to Mary, well, there you see, he did love you after all. Isn't it wonderful that he's grieving like this? I said, do you think that's what's happening up there? Well, he shakes his head and says, no, I realize that, but at least he knows I love her. I loved her. When anything happens, I don't mean just death, but other things too. You say, why should it happen to me? I didn't think that God, I don't think that God engineers death. But this fifth verse got me. And you have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when you are rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. I said to myself, I deserve chastening, but I don't think he would take my wife or my son or engineer a death in order to get at me. But I also said, why should it not have happened to me? Am I better than others? And it almost brought me into the human race in a way that I hadn't been there before, to realize that I belong to to mankind, the race visited by the fall, and not exempt from the vicissitudes that come. You know, I remember in one of the confessional services of one of the liturgies that we used in Holy Communion or in confession of sins years ago. I haven't seen it used or haven't used it. Thou couldst with perfect justice reject us and condemn us for all eternity. No. What right do I have? What right do I have to be exempt? And I was struggling, as my friend is struggling, with a case of self-pity, that this happened to me, and then it was really an edifying thought. Instead of asking why did it happen to me, why not? You know, why not? Are you better than others? And it happened, you know. I discovered too, as most of people discover if they live long enough, that there isn't a family without some major trouble. Not necessarily brought on by their delinquencies or their shortcomings necessarily, but that we are a part of the family of a fallen world where there is tragedy and sorrow and pain. And granted that God didn't engineer the fall and that God doesn't plan disaster for people, it's a part of our existence, of the sorry scheme of things entire. And then in the trough verse, wherefore lift up hands which hang down, and the feeble knees. Make straight paths for your feet. Let that which is lame be turned out of the way, but is rather healed. And looking diligently lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many are defiled. You just can't afford to be bitter about it, because bitterness doesn't do anything for you, and it makes life hard for others. So you simply, however you explain your the disaster or the tragedy or the pain or the sorrow that has come, you simply can't afford to pull others down with you into a kind of pit of bitterness or, well, continued grief, let's say.
But these are difficult to handle. And I don't know whether my friend will make it. 2 years now we've worked at it, and he still hasn't made it. And he walks in gloom most of the time. And sometimes I'd like to shake him and spank him, but he's too big. But what's happening, of course, is that with this continued gloom, there's no joy even in memory. And they had a marvelous life together. I think it's possible by projecting so that you have the person who's gone, really not gone. We said to ourselves, well, for 2 years he was across the ocean, and now, and we wrote him, and he wrote to us, but we didn't constantly think about him. Now he's across another ocean, the eternal ocean. We can't write to him, or he to us. But I had a feeling after his death that he was much closer than he had been when he belonged to time and space, and he was separated by whatever it was, 4,000 miles. That now he was right here, and that the veil that separates the saints, or the living from the dead, the saints below and the saints above, is a very thin one. And I discovered that it was impossible in my prayers to drop his name. So I blessed, you know, I blessed my children and others, and I'd have to keep him there, because I said, if I drop him, that kind of means I don't think he exists. And I think the Roman Catholic Church has got one over us on that point. They've allowed the saints, those who've gone on, to be around. We kind of shunted them off as if they really don't exist. And then having them exist somewhere, then you can back up and live in the memories and let the memories give you life. And this he's having difficulty with. Well, I think that's about our time, too. But most of us, I'm sure, have had some parallel experience. It may not have been death. Maybe something else. But this temptation to self-pity and to bitterness and yielding to that, very practical, pragmatic verses. It doesn't do anybody any good. And in fact, it makes life kind of bad for everybody concerned. And then the best counter is consider you haven't looked to Jesus. You haven't resisted yet the blood. That is, you haven't been crucified after all. You got your troubles, but take a look at your Lord. And then remember all those who've gone on are there to cheer you on and sustain you. I think they are. I think at that point too, I never pray to my parents. That is, I never ask my parents, now pray for me. Mary, Mother of God, pray for us. I don't do that. But I do ask myself, why don't I? I wouldn't hesitate to ask them to pray for me when they're alive here. Why shouldn't I ask them to pray for me when they leave the earth. I know I've got the answer, but the tricky one. You may end up just praying to them and not going beyond them to God. I realize that. But I remember when our son died, we got a letter from a lady that had been kind of his second mother over in England, and she said that when Paul left her, when he had come back home, he had said, I will keep on praying for you. And she said, I hope he does. She was Anglican, so she was more accustomed to dealing with the saints than we. But I think this continuity, the bleachers, the rays, however tough it is down here, remember somebody's gone ahead and it was tougher for him.